Multiple groups in the city have condemned the participation of the cycling team Israel Premier Tech at the Grand Prix cycling race this coming Sunday. Israel Premier Tech is a cycling team who were invited by the UCI, the world's governing body for the sport of cycling, to race in various cities, including Montreal. The team Israel Premier Tech is owned by Canadian-Israeli business magnate Sylvan Adams, who is a friend of Israel's Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu, a man wanted by the International Court of Justice for war crimes. Groups like Palestinian and Jewish Unity, the Palestinian Youth Movement, and Bikers for Palestine have all condemned the participation of Israel Premier Tech at the race and are urging the City of Montreal to call for the team's ban. This is Bill Vandriel, an organizer for the local group Bikers for Palestine.
This is a team owned by Sylvan Adams, who's previously a Montreal-based billionaire. He makes it very clear that the point of the team is to promote Israel. In his own words, he talks about how it can be used to change the image of Israel on the world stage. And when it comes to what's happening in Gaza, he doesn't mince words at all. When he's talking about the genocide, he talks gleefully about how they're going to mop up in Gaza, this kind of genocidal rhetoric. And we've seen as well, he's a close personal friend of Benjamin Netanyahu. And even Netanyahu is tweeting his support for the team.
There is precedent for bans from the UCI on political and moral grounds. The UCI banned Russian teams from competition after the invasion of Ukraine. Vandriel says a similar stance must be taken at different levels when it comes to Israel.
We're outraged by this. We're disgusted that an event in our city is going to be used to promote a genocide in that way. We're disgusted by the complicity of Valerie Plante and the city government. We're disgusted by the complicity of the UCI.
The groups will be protesting the event as the team rides by the Georgia Tiens Cartier Monument at the base of Mont Royal on Sunday, September 14th at 1 p.m.
Today, we would look back in shame in the way that Hitler was able to host the Olympics. So I think we need to recognize that there is a role, what we call sports washing, which is using sports to kind of normalize and make it acceptable and kind of manufacture the consent for these atrocities to be carried out.
Israel Premier Tech would not respond for comment, but refers to itself as a, quote, professional cycling team. Sylvan Adams has called the team ambassadors for Israel. For the Local Journalism Initiative, I'm Adam Innes.
We'll be right back. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to the Tommy John Show here on CJLO 1690 AM in Montreal. Hope everyone is doing well. My goodness, what a show we have for you guys today. Hope everyone is having a great Monday. And we got a whole lot to talk about today on the Tommy John Show. Week 3 in the NFL is almost done. We've got a classic game tonight that will wrap up Week 3 between the Lions and the Ravens. We'll break that down. An unbelievable 1 o'clock window yesterday with block kicks and turnovers and everything. We'll get into it here on the Tommy John Show. We had the Dolphins and the Bills on Thursday night. Buffalo keeps their perfect streak alive right now at 3-0. It was dicey there for a little bit, but the Bills improved to 3-0. We'll get into that. The Rams almost came out of Philly with a win. We'll get into that. But we also have to get into the college football slate as well. Big wins by Indiana. Big wins by Miami. A huge win for USC. They are now ranked. So we'll get into all of it here on the Tommy John Show. And we'll dissect more of what Connor McDavid is saying. This is really strange. Everyone thought he would get this extension done. Draisaitl signed last year. Loves Edmonton. Loves everything about the Oilers. And when you hear him talk, like, oh, is this guy going to stay? This is last year in Edmonton. It's very, very strange. So we'll break down some of McDavid's comments later in the show as well. But we have to start like we always do with the National Football League. And I am going to start off on a game that I didn't think we would start off with, but we have to. So the Dallas Cowboys yesterday, they're coming off a dramatic win last week against the New York Giants, who stink. If you guys stayed up to watch the Sunday Nighter, the Giants stink. They're an awful football team. They have no business being in a football game with a team like the Dallas Cowboys on paper, with a team like the Kansas City Chiefs, with a team, pick a team that has decent quarterback play. The Giants should not be on the field with them. I'm sorry, their defense makes stops, but with Russell Wilson at quarterback, they're incredibly limited, and we all saw that yesterday. And last weekend, Russell Wilson threw for 450-something yards, had the most passing yards in a game in his career. That was a week ago. And I came into the game thinking that the Bears were the disaster on paper between Dallas and Chicago. Oh, watch out for the Bears. The Bears stink. The Bears can't do anything. The Bears stink. And that's why I thought, you know what, Dallas is probably going to win. Dak's playing very well, was excellent last week, was excellent week one at Philadelphia. Dak has been fantastic since the start of the 2025 season. Caleb Williams has been a mess. Ben Johnson doesn't really have a grasp on what he's doing yet. That defense allowed 50 points last week. So I assume Dallas, you know what, they're not an amazing team. But they had a big win last weekend. The kicker makes everything. Dak's playing well. George Pickens, CeeDee Lamb. I'm going to take the Cowboys. Foolish of me, because that defense is one of the worst I've ever seen in the National Football League. They were putrid. And I will give Caleb Williams his credit. 298, four touchdowns. He sent you through for 300 yards and four touchdowns. Was incredibly efficient. And he looked like the Caleb Williams that we were promised when he was selected number one in the draft out of USC. That looked like the Heisman winning Caleb Williams. That looked like the quarterback who was the slam dunk number one pick in the draft. He was excellent yesterday. The ball was out on time. That flea flicker throw down the field to Luther Burden is elite. You cannot coach that. That is just pure God-given talent. And Caleb Williams is one of the most talented players in football. But it was just about the coaching and getting him talent. And we saw that over on Sunday afternoon. He was fantastic, Luther Burden. Roma Dunze, who was a top 10 pick last year, was great. Colston Loveland had a big 30-yard catch. So there's talent on this football team. But this, to me, as great as Caleb Williams played and as great as Ben Johnson's offense looked in week number 3, this is all about the Dallas Cowboys. That was an appalling performance on defense. Appalling. They couldn't do anything. They could not do anything. Even when they force a fourth and goal right at that point in the game, you think, great, they held them to 3. It's only going to be a 2-score game. And then on fourth and goal, and it was an implosion in coverage, and the receivers just standing wide open in the end zone. So that is a very concerning game for the Dallas Cowboys. Dak, I'll give him credit. He's played well. It wasn't amazing yesterday, but that second interception was not his fault. It hit Pickens right in the hands. To me, Dak's going to be fine, and CeeDee Lamb, if he's healthy, the offense is going to score. But you cannot win with defense like that. And I've been surprised. Schottenheimer's been a better coach than I thought. He gives him a lot of new, young energy. Maybe Mike McCarthy's voice was getting annoying in Dallas. Pretty stale. Same voice over and over and over again. They switched up with Schottenheimer. Okay, they're doing better. But to me, Dallas's defense is very concerning. Very concerning. Because if you allow the Bears, who puked all over themselves week one against Minnesota, who could not stop a thing and could not score in the second half at Detroit, they come home and beat the brakes off you like they did, winning by three scores, that is a problem. That is a huge problem for the Dallas Cowboys. Their defense cannot do anything. They gave up 24 in week one, where the Eagles were scoring on every drive, and then that funky rain delay happens, and then the offenses were out of sync. They gave up 37 to Russell Wilson and the Giants, and then they just gave up 31 to the Bears. And what do they have coming next weekend, albeit off a loss, the Green Bay Packers, who were horrendous yesterday against the Cleveland Browns on offense. You know they're going to have something to say about it next week. So to me, Dallas, it's very concerning. It's very, you cannot win football games in the National Football League with defensive play like that. You just can't do it. And Matt Eberflus, listen, he got the Bears head coaching job all those years ago because of what he did defensively in Indianapolis. Now he gets canned from the Bears, goes to the Cowboys. I thought, you know what, at least he's a decent coordinator. When he was there in Chicago, the Bears knew how to play defense. He just does not have the talent. He does not have it. And yes, they could use a player like Micah Parsons, but I think they could have Lawrence Taylor on that defense and it wouldn't make much of a difference. They can't really do much against the run. They get shredded in the pass game. What do the Cowboys do defensively that gives you any hope? Nothing. Absolutely nothing. Now, do I believe Dallas is a better football team than the Bears? I do. I think yesterday was just error after error after error. It was just one of those games. They're moving the ball right down the field on the first drive, and then Tariq Stevenson, whatever his name is, just rips the ball out of Williams' hands from behind, and it's a fumble. Dallas was moving right down the field on that drive. That really changed the football game because the Bears did not do much on that first drive. Dallas gets the ball, moves two, three run plays, just ripping run plays like there's no defense there. And then that fumble happens. It wasn't really a fumble, just a takeaway. Literally just ripped it out of his hand. And that really changed the football game from there. So to me, Dallas, that is one of the more concerning performances I've seen in recent memory. That defense was so bad, it was scary. Scary. And next weekend, you know how many people are going to watch that Packers-Cowboys game on Sunday Night Football? The Micah Parsons return after that whole fiasco in the offseason? It's going to be a lot. And how will the Cowboys respond? That's what I want to know. How will they respond? This is very interesting. And in this schedule, listen, okay, you got Green Bay. That's hard. There's the Jets in there. There's the Panthers in there. There's the Raiders in there. And games that I thought for sure the Cowboys would win a week ago, 2 weeks ago, now I'm not so sure. They were awful. Absolutely awful yesterday. Having said that, there might have been a team that I thought looked even worse than the Giants and even worse than the Cowboys. That was the Atlanta Falcons. Can we briefly talk about this? So, I do a pool every year with my friends, and we pick teams for the year. We're eight guys. We each get four teams for the year, and we see how it happens. So last year, I was bullish on the Atlanta Falcons. They had an easy schedule. They just gave Kirk Cousins all this money. They had talent all over the place. Drake London, Bijan Robinson, Kyle Pitts, Darnell Mooney, a good offensive line, easy schedule. I'm in a horrible division. I'm going to take the Atlanta Falcons. And it looked great for a while. They get a classic signature win against Tampa Bay. And what do these teams do in those instances? They follow it up with stinkers. And that's what the Atlanta Falcons do. The Atlanta Falcons are a choke job of an organization. I don't even have to bring up the 28-3 I just did now, but I don't even have to bring that one up. The Falcons are a joke. Every time the Atlanta Falcons win a big game or put themselves on a big stage and they play well, they always come back the next week and are flat. Always. I cannot believe it. Late in the year, they were gifted a loss by the Tampa Bay Buccaneers where they controlled their own destiny. And they lose to Washington. And then in a game when they still have their playoff hopes alive, Tampa Bay losing in the last week, they lose to the Panthers at home. Last week, they get a huge win. Maybe the biggest of the Raheem Morris era. They made J.J. McCarthy look like he'd never played football before. They go into Minnesota on a Sunday night, and they beat the brakes off the Minnesota Vikings. That is a great win. Road dogs, no one expecting you to win. You go out and win, and if it wasn't for those weird, funky kicks by Younghoe Koo in week one, the Falcons should be 2-0. And what do they follow that up with yesterday? Not against the Chiefs. Not against the Bills. Not against the Eagles, the Rams. They are playing the Carolina Panthers. The Carolina Panthers. Maybe, until yesterday, the worst team in football, I thought. They couldn't do anything, the Carolina Panthers. Nothing. And what do they do? What do they go out and do? They go out and stink up the joint like I've never seen a team stink up the joint. Ever in my life. It was remarkable. Remarkable. Michael Penix was horrendous. Horrendous. And I've been a Michael Penix defender. That was one of the worst games I've ever seen a quarterback play. He could not do anything. Not to mention this defense that everyone raved about for the past week. Raheem Morris, defensive specialist. They traded up and got Pierce from Tennessee. They went and got Jalen Walker from Georgia. The Falcons' defense is fixed. They allowed 30 points. 30 points to Bryce Young and the Panthers. Listen to this stat line. Michael Penix, 18 of 36, 172 yards, no touchdowns, two picks, a passer rating of 40. And should I be surprised? Should I be surprised? My answer is no. When it was happening, when everything was going wrong, was I surprised? No. I wasn't. Not in the slightest. Because this is who the Atlanta Falcons have been for the last 10, 15 years. Maybe ever. But since I've started watching football, this is what the Atlanta Falcons do. They get your hopes up, and then the next week or the 2 weeks later, they just rip it out. And it's usually the week after. How is that the same team that played in Minnesota last Sunday? How is that the same football team? I'm serious. How? You're on the road against a playoff team, a team that won 14 games last year, make a statement, and you follow it up against the Carolina Panthers, and you don't even score a point. How does that happen? That was a disaster of a performance. And what the crazy thing is? I'm not surprised. I'm not surprised. It is remarkable. And it's always the Falcons. And when that game was going on, everyone around me was watching. Oh my God, can you believe it? Yeah, I can totally believe it. Because we've all been burnt by the Atlanta Falcons, whether you bet on sports or don't. Whether you're in a survivor pool or you're not. They just always find a way to do this. And it's crazy. It's criminal. Criminal. Raheem Morris, what a joke. And I like him. He's a great defensive coordinator. But like I don't know if he's the guy. He doesn't inspire. The Falcons aren't going to win a Super Bowl with him, in my opinion. I just don't see it. How do you have performances like that? Still. I have nothing further to say on the Atlanta Falcons. I just could not for a second believe it was happening again. But then when it was happening, I realized it was exactly what the Falcons do, and I was not surprised. They cut Young Weiku. They bring in this Parker Romo kid. He's the answer at kicker. Now he's missing kicks all over the place. It was the most Atlanta Falcons game I've ever seen. On paper, they're one of the, what, the six most talented teams in football? How many teams have Drake London and Kyle Pitts and Bijan, who's maybe the best running back in football? It's unbelievable. I've never, ever, ever, ever have seen anything like it. Ever. And I'm not surprised. When it was happening, I was not surprised. When the Falcons missed that kick, I was like, oh my God, Carolina's going to win. And I thought, yeah, Carolina's going to win because this is the Falcons. And every time they have a big performance, they follow it up with a stinker. That's who they are. Quickly to the New England Patriots. So I'm a big Patriots fan. And if you missed that game yesterday, they fell 21-14 to Aaron Rodgers and the Steelers. I have never seen a game like that in my life. I can confidently say I have never, ever, ever seen a game like that in my life. That was appalling. Drake May played great. I'm not taking anything away from Drake May. That interception he threw was not great. It hit it was a Cam Hayward's hand and it flew up and it was picked. But that was awful. The fumble wasn't great. But if you look at the rest of this team, what they did, the defense played great. This to me is all about the offense. Drake May played great. I thought Hunter Henry was very good. I thought getting Diggs in the offense was good. Ramondre Stevenson. He's had fumble issues, to say the least. He had 7 last year. 7. The opening drive of the game, fumble. And give the Patriots credit. They were down 14-0. They come back, have a very good drive, score a touchdown. Then they get a golden opportunity right before the half to at least put a field goal on the board, probably a touchdown. They have first and goal from the 2-yard line, the 2. And they throw it 3 straight plays and it gets picked. Then to start the second half, Aaron Rodgers throws one of the worst interceptions I've ever seen to Robert Spillane. He runs it back to the 10-yard line. We get the ball to the 2-yard line again. And who do we hand the ball off to? I say we like I'm on the team. Who do the Patriots hand the ball off to? Ramondre Stevenson. And what does he do on the 1-yard line? He fumbles. He fumbles. Again. That's it. He's out of the game. At least the Patriots got the message. This guy cannot do anything right. Fumbling all over the place. Then we'll put in the other running back, Antonio Gibson. His first drive as the starting running back, he fumbles. And the Patriots were in this game. The defense was stopping the Steelers at will. The Steelers are not a good football team. That was one of the most winnable football games I have ever seen. And New England, 5 turnovers. And then to sum up the entire game, they have 4th and 1 on the Steelers 35, maybe around there. Drake May's moving them down the field, playing very well. J.J. Watt in the broadcast booth says, I've been very impressed with Drake May. He has receivers dropping passes. He has his running backs fumbling at will. I've been very impressed with him so far. They're moving the ball. That's J.J. Watt who said that on the broadcast. A second later, they got 4th and 1. Drake May, under pressure, throws the ball to Pop Douglas right at the marker, and he runs backwards. If that was Edelman, Amendola, or pick another player on the Patriots roster, you don't have to go back to the glory years. Pick anyone. Diggs, Kayshon Booty, Efton Chisholm, you name it. Pick any of the receivers on that team. They cut upfield. Pop Douglas, for some unknown reason, goes backwards. He's at the markers. You jump forward. It's a first down. The drive stays alive. He runs backwards, tackled behind the sticks. The Patriots lose in a game they were dominating on defense, in a game where they were moving the ball up and down the field. It's just the most boneheaded mistakes at the worst times that cost them. Fumble on the first drive leads to a touchdown. They're on the two-yard line, first and goal. They throw it three times. The third time gets picked. They get an interception, run it back inside the five-yard line. They get it to the one-yard line. Ramondre Stevenson fumbles. Then the next drive, the Patriots, it's a tie game now because Drake May threw a touchdown to Hunter Henry. It's a tie game now. Drake May fumbles. We put in the new running back. Antonio Gibson fumbles. It was one of the most insane and pathetic, and I can't even describe what kind of game it was. Performances you've ever seen. Like, I'm at a loss for words. I'm seriously at a loss for words. It was that bad. That bad of a loss. Now, there's a lot of teachable moments. If the Patriots clean those things up, they should be a competitive football team. I don't know how a game like that doesn't derail a season. I don't know. I really don't know. They should have won this game by 2-3 scores. And I've never seen a guy in Ramondre Stevenson fumble so much in my life. He's in the National Football League. He went to Oklahoma for college. He's a very good runner, but he can't hold on to the football. And I wonder, that's not a physical thing. That must be a mental thing, right? So here's an idea for Ramondre Stevenson. Just have two hands on the football at all times. It's unbelievable. I've never, ever, ever seen anything like it. And if you're a Steelers fan, I know you won the game, but you cannot be happy. The defense made some plays. All right, fair enough. But the offense didn't look good. Aaron Rodgers had a brutal pick. There was no firepower. The Patriots lost that football game, and it wasn't even close. You cannot have any other takeaways from that football game. The Patriots lost it, and the Steelers are like, oh, thank you. We weren't ready to play today, but we will take it. We'll go to 2-1 in a hard division. That Ike was struggling the last 23 hours. I've been struggling. I really have. Been having a great day. Oh, yeah, you know, watching football. But just in the back of my head, I was sitting there like, how in the world did we lose that football game? I'm going to bed saying goodnight to my family. Goodnight, guys. And I'm walking up the stairs to go to bed thinking, how in the world did we lose that football game? I get up this morning, brush my teeth, going to get a little snack for breakfast, and while I'm making my toast, I'm thinking, how in the world did we lose that football game? I don't understand it. Drake May throws for almost 300 yards, 2 touchdowns. The defense plays out of its mind, and we lose. And it's not just, okay, we turn the ball over, let's limit turnovers. They turned it over 5 times, and the same running back fumbled it twice, and we turned the ball over twice inside the 2-yard line. It's one of those things that if the Patriots win 8 games, win 9 games, or run the verge of the playoffs, we'll be thinking about, remember that damn game against Pittsburgh at home in the throwback uniforms where we could not get out of our own way? I told people I'd keep it calm today because if I could really vent right now, but I won't. But I won't. The last thing we have to touch on before we switch to college football is that Green Bay Packers game. Now, I'm not saying the Green Bay Packers are not going to win the Super Bowl. I'm not saying that's not a possibility. I'm not saying that won't happen. Good teams lose to bad teams all the time. But that was maybe the perfect example of how to lose a football game yesterday. Now, Green Bay, the first 2 weeks, they beat up on the Lions at home. Then to really send a statement, they make Jaden Daniels look like he shouldn't even be in the NFL in week two. They put on one of the great performances through 2 weeks we've seen in recent NFL memory. Everyone's loving the Packers. Jordan Love's basically Aaron Rodgers, Brett Favre 2.0. It's the greatest defense since the 85 Bears. Matt LaFleur is an offensive genius. Their players in the locker room saying they want to go undefeated. This is what the Packers were saying. They were pretty confident through 2 weeks. They just got Micah Parsons. Well, we hammer up on everyone. Our quarterback's healthy and better than yours. They were very arrogant. For a fan base that's usually respectful, they were very arrogant. And yet yesterday, they go into Cleveland, Ohio, against an offense that doesn't think the forward pass exists, against an offense that cannot move the football, against an offense that has Joe Flacco at 41 years of age at quarterback, and they lose. And it's not that they lose in this fashion, Green Bay. It's not that. It's not that you lost to the Browns. It's not that you lost the road game. It's how it went down. The fashion in which you lost that game. Jordan Love was awful. That pick he threw was one of the worst things I've ever seen. That game was over. Okay, you're facing a great defense. It's like an old school leather helmet game. It's run the ball, punt. One of those games, you're up 3-0. Then you finally go up 10-0. That interception was awful. And if you think about it, the Browns, at several points in this game, could have scored. Could have scored touchdowns. The one that sticks out to me is when they're literally at the 1 yard line and then they get a chop block penalty and moves them back 15 yards and then they just kept going backwards. And I'm thinking to myself, how in the world are the Packers not winning by 20? And I know Cleveland's defense is remarkable. But when I'm watching the Browns on offense, I couldn't believe it. They were just moving. They were literally at the 1 yard line and they're just walking backwards. Chop block penalty. Pass behind the line of scrimmage that's awful. A tackled immediately. It was like watching a JV football team on offense. They had no juice. They cannot move the ball at all. And I don't understand why they're throwing in that scenario, Green Bay. Who cares? Punt the ball away. You have this amazing defense going up against the worst offense maybe I've ever seen. Yet they get aggressive. We'll throw with Jordan Love. It gets picked. Oh my. It was awful. And honestly, this can do one of two things for Green Bay. I think it will motivate them, wake them up, because they thought they won the Super Bowl already through 2 weeks. They have all my friends who are Packer fans already booking their tickets to San Francisco to go watch the Packers in the Super Bowl. That's what all they were thinking. So this loss, I think, will wake them up, because talent-wise, the Packers are right there with anyone in football. But the reason why I favored the Rams, the reason why I favored the Eagles, is just because I trust them in big spots better than the Packers do. And a lot of that has to do with the quarterback play. I know Jordan Love has all the talent in the world, and he played great in that wild card game against Dallas. But let's be honest. Game on the line. Matt Stafford or Jordan Love. Game on the line. Jalen Hurts or Jordan Love. There's not one of you guys who would take Jordan Love. And if you did, you're wrong. Matt Stafford's a certified gamer. Matt Stafford's won a Super Bowl. Jalen Hurts has won a Super Bowl. And they weren't just there for the ride. Matt Stafford was the driving force of that Rams team. Yes, they had a great defense, and Cooper Kupp won the Triple Crown that year. But if Matt Stafford's not the quarterback, they don't win the Super Bowl. Jalen Hurts, people like to say it was the greatest team of all time and a lot of quarterbacks going to win in that offense. How good was Jalen Hurts in the playoffs last year? Seriously. I cannot get over the Jordan Love. I don't understand it. He's had maybe 8 good games in his career. The Packers gave him What, $200-something million based off 7 good games? And we all try to act like he's in this category. He's not yet. He isn't. He's not in the top 4. He's not better than Herbert. He's not better than Daniels. He's not better than Stafford. He's not better than Jared Goff. He's not better than Baker Mayfield. Be honest. How many quarterbacks do you take over Jordan Love? I think you put at least 10 or 12. Mahomes, Allen, Burrow, Josh Allen, Herbert, that's 5. We have Baker, Jared Goff, Matt Stafford, Jalen Hurts, Jaden Daniels, that's 10. He's better than Dak? That's the kind of class he's in. Now, CJ Stroud was in that class, and there was a bunch of other players who were in that class, and Stroud has taken a big step back. He has been awful, and the Texans look lost. So maybe he's better than Stroud now. But I don't understand. Yeah, he's in the perfect situation to succeed. Amazing offensive line, a guru offensive play caller. Got the best defense maybe in all of football. He's got one of the best running backs in all of football. A tremendous tight end in Tucker Kraft. They just went out and got Matt Golden, first round pick from Texas at wide receiver. There are no excuses for Jordan Love. None. And for 2 weeks, he played pretty well. But the reason why I favored Philadelphia, the reason why I favor the Rams, the reason why I might even favor Tampa, it's just the quarterback spot. For some reason, in big spots, when they need a play, when the game is close, Jordan Love is not the guy. I just have a weird, weird feeling about it. I do. How in the world did they lose that game yesterday? If they just ran the ball with Josh Jacobs and they punt, Joe Flacco's not moving the ball down the field. They get greedy. We got Jordan Love. This is Jordan Love's team. And he throws a pick. The talent's there. The arm talent's there. The size is there. He's mobile. Can make every big-time NFL throw. But to me, when I've seen Jordan Love in huge spots, not when his team's up by 3 scores at the end of the game, not when they're front-running like crazy, when I've seen him in close games, whether it's at San Francisco in the NFC divisional round, whether it was the Giants on a Monday night 2 years ago, or whether it was yesterday in Cleveland, when they are in a dogfight, he stinks up the joint. Last year in Philly in the wild card round, he was awful. Absolutely awful. It's hard to believe. It really is hard to believe. And I get it. He has all the talent. He's played well in one playoff game before when they blew out the Cowboys and they were great for 2 weeks. And we want to put Jordan Love in that conversation. But to me, in the biggest moments, he just hasn't produced. I'm sorry. I feel like that's a fair assessment. And I'm not writing the kid off. But I hate that we try and rush these guys into this stardom. CJ Stroud had one good year. And we want to throw him into the top 5 quarterback conversation. It's crazy. To me, Jordan Love is probably the weak point of the football team in big spots. I think the defense can get a stop. That offensive line can hold up. Josh Jacobs is elite, and I trust the play caller. Where I get worried, when they play a good team, when they're not blowing them out, how is Jordan Love going to play? And that's the concerning part. We're going to take a quick break, and we come back, we have to talk about college football. Indiana made a statement against Illinois. USC got a big win against an undefeated Michigan State. And we had a big, big win by the Michigan Wolverines going into Nebraska. Miami now ranked number 2 in the country with their win over Florida. We'll get into it next on the Tommy John Show. Back after this quick word from our sponsors. We'll be right back.
Hey, do you love movies? Discover the best of art house cinema in three theaters all across the city. That is Cinéma Musée, Du Parc, and Beaubien. Students only pay $11 per ticket, all day, every day. See you at the movies!
The Go-Go Radio Magic Show. Every Friday night from 6 to 8 on CJLO.
This one goes out to the one I love.
Back here in the Tommy John Show. So I'll quickly run through the rest of week three. That's a tongue twister. Rest of week three. Here we go. So we mentioned Buffalo with a huge win over the Miami Dolphins. I knew the Dolphins would play better than people thought. They heard all week that McDaniel's going to get fired. This is the end. Nonsense. We all knew what was going to happen. They were going to play well. They were going to play hard, and obviously Buffalo's the better team, and no one thought Buffalo would lose, but that was going to be a tough spot for Buffalo, and they got the job done. They passed the test, a test that the Packers failed, where you're playing a team where you're way better than, that's crumbling, hasn't won a game, morale's low, but they're going to go out and fight. And you might not be mentally prepared for that. It's easy to go up and be ready to face the Chiefs. It's easy to go up to be ready to face the Ravens. The Dolphins at home, short week, might be tough to get up for that one. And they got up and they responded. They got punched in the mouth early, and Josh Allen and the Bills responded. So big win for them. The Minnesota Vikings absolutely annihilated the Bengals 48-10. Big game from Carson Wentz. Jake Browning was awful, was just throwing interceptions like it was going out of style. The Vikings rebound in a very nice way. They win 48-10. The Jags, my goodness. It's 2-1, and that was a game that both teams are trying to lose. Houston, I am stunned at Houston through 3 weeks. C.J. Stroud was horrendous. He's throwing the ball 40 times a game. He's throwing for 200 yards. Nick Chubb is not the Nick Chubb of old. They are missing Joe Mixon in the worst way. And Trevor Lawrence, I know he won the game, but he was awful too. This was a team. That was a game that both teams were trying to lose. But as we sit right now, Jacksonville is 2-1 and should be 3-0. They really let Cincinnati off the hook last week. But they got a big test the next 2 weeks, San Francisco and Kansas City. Let's see what Liam Cohen and the Jaguars have in store. Maybe the surprise of all surprises, Daniel Jones and the Indianapolis Colts continue to roll 41-20 over the Titans. He has been remarkable through 3 weeks. Another strong game for him, not turning the ball over. And what I really like about Daniel Jones is how he extends plays with his legs. He had that big third down conversion in that football game. He's lethal with his legs when he wants to be. If you don't have a spy on Daniel Jones, he can easily take off and rip 15-20 yard runs. So that was a big, big win by the Colts. They are 3-0. The first time since 2009 that the Colts are 3-0. They lead the way, and they go on the road to L.A. next week to take on the Rams. Then they come home for two, don't say easy games, but Arizona and the Raiders. So there's a good chance the Colts can be 5-1 through 6 weeks. So that's very good for the Indianapolis Colts. The Atlanta Falcons, we mentioned, that was an appalling performance, 30-0, the loss of the Falcons. I don't want to talk about the Falcons anymore. It's just who they are. We mentioned it briefly. They get your hopes up. Great win in Minnesota. They follow it up with the biggest stinker of all time. That's who the Falcons have been. Not just in the Raheem Morris era. Not just in the Arthur Smith era. Not just in the Dan Quinn era. You can go on and on and on. That's who the Atlanta Falcons are and who have been for the longest time. So that was just a deflating, deflating loss if you're an Atlanta Falcons fan. The Eagles win a classic 33-26 with a big comeback. Jalen Hurts played very well in the second half. They couldn't do anything in the first half. They responded well. A.J. Brown had a great game, not to mention Devontae Smith had 8 catches. The Eagles really turned it on the second half, but this is twice now twice that the Rams have played in Philadelphia and have gone right down to the wire with the Eagles. So if there's one team that doesn't fear the Philadelphia Eagles, I think it's the LA Rams. For that game not to be a primetime slot is beyond me, a 1 o'clock window game, because we have to put on Caleb Williams and the Bears just for ratings. Okay. Or how is the Sunday night game Chiefs-Giants? How can you not put Rams-Eagles on Sunday night? That made no sense to me. But, yeah, the great win by the Eagles, but I'm not selling my Rams stock in the slightest. They got a good pass rush. They got two elite wide receivers. Matt Stafford's a baller. And they had a chance to win that game. Two block kicks, too. Crazy. We mentioned the Steelers-Patriots game. The Browns, just a remarkable win, 13-10, all scoring in the late in the third and the fourth quarter. One of the crazier things you'll ever see. Jordan Love, awful. Joe Flacco, awful. That Judkins kid, though, from Ohio State's pretty good. He came in and he had a little bit of juice, the only offensive player that was doing anything for the Browns. Tampa Bay almost blew that game with the Jets, but Baker Mayfield, for the third week in a row, leads a game-winning drive. 29-27, the Buccaneers get it done. 23-20, the Chargers come back on Bo Nix and the Broncos. Listen, the Chargers, three games, 3-0. That's very impressive. Three games, 3-0, and all against divisional opponents. Chiefs in Brazil, last week on the road against the Raiders, week three at home against Denver. That is huge. 3 weeks, 3-0 against three divisional opponents. The Chargers, watch out for them. Justin Herbert playing at an MVP level. Seattle hammered the Saints. No one cares. That was going to happen regardless. The San Francisco 49ers on a Mac Jones game-winning drive, kicking a field goal late to take down the Arizona Cardinals 16-15. Then the Sunday nighter, Mahomes and the Chiefs finally get a win. Man, their first win since the AFC Championship game in January. They started off 0-2 for the first time in the Mahomes, Reed, Kelsey era. And they got their first win yesterday against a woeful New York Giants offense with Russell Wilson. There's just such a ceiling, and it's a low one. It's the lowest ceiling you can ever have. You know what you're going to get. He's going to dump it off. He's just a horrendous quarterback right now. That last segment at the end of the game, he gets a delay of game by throwing the ball into the tunnel. There's no receiver in the area. He then runs forward for 4 yards, a QB draw that was immediately tackled. Then he throws one into the 30th row, and then he threw his last one off the goalpost. This is what Russell Wilson is now in 2025, and I know he had 450 yards last weekend, but we mentioned against the worst defense maybe of all time in the 2025 Dallas Cowboys. But week one, he stunk. Week three, he stunk, and it looks like the Jackson Dart chants are going to get louder in New York. They have the Chargers next weekend. Don't expect to throw the rookie into that, but they have the Saints in week five. Maybe they do it then, but then they follow that up with Eagles, Broncos, Eagles, 49ers. So there's not really an easy part of this schedule. It's the hardest schedule in football, and the Giants are 0-3. Tonight, we have a big one. I don't know what the hell is going to happen. Lions at Ravens. ESPN have been begging for good Monday night games. Well, they can't beg anymore because they gave them maybe the game of the year and a lot of people's Super Bowl picks with Detroit and Baltimore. To me, I think it's going to be a very good game. I will be rooting for the Lions. I want the Lions to win. They've had a lot of slander about them. If it's a close game, I like the Lions. But if the Ravens get the run game going, they're at home. It's going to be a tough task for the Lions to get that one done. So I'll take Baltimore, but I'm not confident. I think the Lions could easily win this football game. But if it's close, I'm taking the Lions because I trust Jared Goff late. And for some reason, in big games, the Ravens always crumble when it's close. But I think the Ravens are going to get the run game going. I think Lamar's going to be very hard to stop tonight. I'll pick Baltimore to win this football game. We're going to take our second break, and we come back. We'll do a quick college football recap. What a win by Indiana, silencing a lot of critics, saying they're a one-year wonder. And we have to talk about Miami being the number two team ranked in the nation, plus Connor McDavid. Is he leaving Edmonton? We'll have that next on the Tommy John Show. We'll be back right after this word from our sponsors.
We have the students.
Arts in the Margins present Festival Flux, a Montreal experimental music festival taking place from October 1st to 11th. Festival Flux is a unique mix of concerts, workshops, roundtables, presentations, and publication launches, all configured around performance, place, and politics. You won't want to miss innovative artists such as Beam Splitter, Anif Jacques and Ryoko Okama, Bozzini Quartet, Andrew Cyril, Christina Warren, Violence Gratuite, Nada El Shazly, and more. For more information on the festival and how to get tickets, visit fluxmtl.org.
Tune in to Fukubukuro on Saturdays at 8 p.m. for your weekly grab bag of music from Japan, East Asia, and everywhere else. Only on CJLO 1690 AM.
College football recap. Here we go. Had to throw a little bit back there to CBS Sports, one of my favorites. College football, what a week we had. Let's quickly run through the top 25 now. The new AP poll came out yesterday around 2 o'clock. And man, there's a lot of surprising rankings. They have Miami at number 2 after beating a horrendous Florida team, like god awful, and they go up to number 2, which is a bit surprising. I know Penn State didn't play or Oregon didn't play, but them to jump up to that spot seems a bit too strong for me. That's crazy. They barely beat Florida, who lost to Southern Florida, who threw 5 picks against LSU. Them to just jump because Penn State didn't do anything is a bit crazy to me. So Ohio State's still number 1. They did not play last week. Miami won. They're ranked number 2. So Ohio State 1, Miami, Florida 2, Penn State 3, LSU 4 after they routed Southern Louisiana 56-10, Georgia 5, Oregon 6. They hammered Oregon State 41-7. Oklahoma, the biggest jumper. They're up to number 7 with a great win at home against Auburn 24-17. Florida State is ranked number 8. They fell one spot despite beating Kent State 66-10. Texas A&M number 9. The Texas Longhorns dropped 2 spots to number 10 despite Arch Manning playing his best game as a starter against Sam Houston 55-0. Indiana up 8 spots because they took down the number 9 ranked Illinois, the Fighting Illini, 63-10. That was Kirk Cignetti. That was the Hoosiers saying, remember us? Remember the team that was in the college football playoff last year? Remember the team that won 11 games last year? We're better this year. And they proved it. What a statement win against a top 10 team. 63-10. 63-10. Texas Tech up 5 spots with a big win at Utah 34-10. Ole Miss at 13. Iowa State 14. Tennessee 15. They're the second highest ranked one loss team outside of Texas, who locks the week one to Ohio State. They are the next highest because of that classic loss in overtime to Georgia. They're ranked 15, and they had a good win against UAB on Saturday afternoon. Georgia Tech up 2 spots with a 45-24 win against Temple. Alabama at 17. Vanderbilt 18. Michigan up 2 spots to 19 with a big win at Nebraska 30-27. Missouri continues its perfect run with a win 29-20 over the weekend. And then the one I really wanted to talk about, USC finally in the top 25. They were 25, 26 last weekend. I think the AP had them 25. A lot of other people had them unranked. They got a big win, 45-31 at home against Michigan State. They're up to number 21 in the country. Notre Dame get their first win of the year against Purdue. That defense still stinks. You allow Purdue to score 30, but the offense scored 56. Notre Dame ranked 22nd. Illinois falls to 23. TCU 24. BYU 25. So there's a quick recap. The real thing that's interesting to me is Miami jumping up one spot. Listen, I like Miami. I like Carson Beck. The one thing I don't trust, though, in a big spot is Mario Cristobal. I feel like he's an Achilles heel. He's a great recruiter, but his in-game adjustments is alarming. It really is alarming. He's not good at managing the clock. I would be worried in a few weeks if that's the case, but we got to get ready. We have to get ready because in 2 weeks' time, the big one, they'll be on the road at Florida State. This is what the ACC has been dying for. Clemson's dead. Remember everyone picking Clemson to win the national championship? They're ranked fourth. They got blown out by Syracuse. They're 1-3. They're dead. Clemson's done. They won't even win the ACC. I wouldn't be surprised if Dabo and Clemson split up. This is not heading in a good direction at all. To me, I would be stunned. Stunned, absolutely stunned if Miami wins the national championship. I'd be stunned. They're ranked number two right now, but I'd be stunned. And it's nothing against Carson Beck. It's nothing against the program in general. They got good players. I don't trust Mario Cristobal. I don't. This is a huge test for him. On the road at Florida State, the ACC was dying for this matchup. They got it. A great Florida State team, a great Miami team, a rivalry that's just so rich in history. This was a huge matchup for the ACC. They needed both teams to be undefeated when they got to this point, and they got it. They're going to get Carson Beck and the Hurricanes in Florida State, in Tallahassee, to take on the Seminoles, the 8th-ranked Seminoles. 2-8, gotta love it. But if you ask me, gun to my head, is Florida the second-best team in the country? Absolutely not. Absolutely not. Are they a top 10 team? Sure. I like their pass rush. I like their quarterback. But to me, are they better than Georgia? No. Are they better than Ohio State? No. Are they better than Penn State? No. Are they better than Oregon? I don't think so. They're better than LSU? I don't think so. Are they better than Texas? Maybe we can have that discussion. But to me, they're around 9. 10-9. Them being the number two team ranked in the country for beating Notre Dame, who lost to Texas A&M at home, beating South Florida, and beating Florida. And sorry, and the other BCU, whatever that school was. No. That's not it for me. They're not the number two team in the country. They aren't. Now, they can go up and shut me up if they go on the road in Tallahassee and beat the Seminoles. But to me right now, I do not have Florida State at number two, and I really do not get the Mario Cristobal hype. He's a great recruiter, but to me, he had Cam Ward last year and found a way not to make the playoff. I'm skeptical. We're gonna put this on pause till next week. I'm Tommy Lane from the Tommy John Show. Thank you so much for listening. We'll recap week 4 of the NFL season, and we'll talk more about Connor McDavid and his contract situation. I'm Tommy Lane from the Tommy John Show. Thank you so much for listening.
Is that you, Fred?